I will leave at least 15 minutes at the end of this session. We're going to let you out on time. We always do. At least if I'm speaking, you will leave on time. I will take questions on doctor-assisted suicide, what I talked about yesterday. I realize I ended this last session rather abruptly, and I missed a couple of points, so I will be glad to pick them up. I gathered from the questions that you have them, so we'll get to those. What I want to do now is jump into our final topic, which is, what about the enhancement of human beings? I think we all agree that when medicine is used to repair, we're all fine. There's just no issue. But what if medicine is being used for different ends? Not to repair something wrong with you, but to enhance capabilities, principally cognitive abilities. And this is now the big topic in bioethics. So I want to give you a thought experiment. I'm going to let you talk with a buddy about it for about 2 minutes, and then I'm going to pull you back together. Here's the thought experiment. You are a graduate student at Stanford University. Mistake number one. It should be UCLA, but that aside. You're a graduate student at Stanford University. You are studying medicine. Your academic mentor, a world-renowned geneticist, has come up with a treatment, he calls it, quote, treatment, unquote, that will radically enhance your cognitive abilities. It is not for people who have problems. It's only a small selection of people that would even qualify for this treatment, and he wants you to undergo the treatment. He knows you're a Christian, but here's his argument. This treatment will so enhance your cognitive abilities, you will be able to think circles around anybody around you. Your memory will be photographic. You will be able to read large, complex, and voluminous texts like they're comic books, and you will remember them. If you do this, you literally will become the physician who cures things like cancers, because your knowledge will just leapfrog ahead of everybody else. The competitive advantage you'll have will be staggering. I think you should take this treatment. We have no reason to believe it's going to harm you physically. However, it will alter all of your descendants. They too will have this ability. It's a germline treatment. He has given you a list of all the goods. He has even told you that the parable of the Good Samaritan tells you you ought to do this. Because if you truly love your neighbor, you're going to want what's best for your neighbor. Why wouldn't you want your fellow human beings to be better? He tells you he can't take it because he's too old. This needs to be done with someone younger. You're the fit. Are you going to take that treatment? Question number one. That's question number one. Question number two. What, if any, biblical stop signs or yellow flags might come your way with this? I want you to grab a buddy. Talk about that for about 2-3 minutes. Don't leave anybody out. And then I want to hear your responses. All right? Ready, set, go. Grab somebody. one more minute? All right. Okay. Are we taking this? Are we going to do it?
No.
Nobody? What if taking that drug enabled you to refute all the bad theology that's in the world? What if it enabled you to absolutely destroy the political left? I'm starting to sense a shift in the room. What you just told me.
So after we discussed the emotional part, like, yeah, that'd be great, or I don't know, I went back to what is the premise for that. I looked for something biblical or a tether or something that would make this right or wrong.
Okay. She did worldview first. Bingo. I have succeeded. I can go home. Class dismissed. Okay. Very good. What else? Yes. I want what you just said, hold that, and make sure I come back to it, because you said something. I'm not going to tell the rest of you what it was, but it's very important, and if you had taken this drug, you'd know what it was, but, sorry, it's the last session, we're going to have some fun.
I don't think you could do that without having a pride issue.
Enhancement with a pride issue? Yeah.
To know what the negatives are,
too.
He's only told you the positives.
Like,
I mean, I've had
negatives?
Reactions that are supposed to be normal.
You know. No more lefties? What's the negative? No, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes.
This gentleman next to me is too shy to say, but I think he hit the nail on the head. In the Garden of Eden, they wanted the tree of knowledge, good and evil, and that was pride, and it was all of that other mixed in, and I think that nails it, too.
All right, well, let me play devil's advocate. You know, we want knowledge. Yeah, we want knowledge. Does the Bible tell us to pursue knowledge?
Yes.
Tells us to pursue wisdom. This is going to help you have that.
But are books wisdom?
What's that?
Are books written by men wisdom? Not always.
Not always, but often are. For example, imagine this. No more airplane crashes. Pilot error, gone.
Behind it.
Feels pretty good when I'm at 34,000 feet. Go ahead.
We have one here.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so you kind of alluded to this earlier on the other side about what if all of our knowledge wiped out the left? If you could make a person have all kinds of knowledge, you can't control whether they'll use it for good or evil. And so, what if Hitler is thinking, and say he's got a high IQ higher than Billy Graham.
Well, but
he thinks he's doing good,
But that's true of all knowledge. For example, knowledge of medicine can be used to heal and used to cure or kill, but that doesn't mean we don't pursue it.
True. I'm just saying the fact that a person gets a lot of knowledge and they get more intelligence, what if they use it for evil?
But again, that can be used of any good thing. Any good thing can be misused. Cars can be used to drive you to the doctor or mow people down, right? By the way, I'm playing devil's advocate here for a reason, but yes, sir.
I just think the whole genetic modification is probably where the key is.
Definitely, definitely.
No, his point was fine. Knowledge is power, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so I'll just go back to, you know, even like the analogy for the young people, the Lord of the Rings, you know, Gandalf said, I would take this ring to do good.
You had to throw the Lord of the Rings at me. A hardcore Anglophile like me who spends a couple of months a year or a couple of weeks a year at Oxford, you just had to do that to me. All right. Throw the Tolkien. Go nuclear on me. Yes.
Look, Roger, God designs us perfectly. Okay.
Oh, we got to use the mic. I got to remember that. We need the enhanced sound. Go ahead.
God doesn't make mistakes. You know, he designed us perfectly. And what we're talking about here is something beyond his design. Playing God. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong, for example, with taking supplements and so forth that repair or, you know, might restore some of our cognitive ability, our memory, and so forth. I don't see any.
Coffee does that for me.
That doesn't work anyway. But it's fine. But what we're talking about here is essentially trying to redesign God's design, and God doesn't.
How clear is that line between repair and enhancement? For example, what if you lose a limb and the one you get replaced, the one they replace it with, the mechanical one, allows you to run faster? That's common.
There's a lot of medical things that there is it's hard to draw the line because, you know, kids born with
Well, I think I'm assuming everybody here agrees that repairing the body and bringing it back to normal levels is not something we're debating. Am I right about that? Okay. What I'm talking about is what if that line between repair and enhancement isn't as clear as we think it is? For example, not to touch any raw nerves here. Are treatments for balding enhancement or repair? I intentionally went there. You knew I did, didn't you? How about braces, orthodontics? How about eye color change? You want a different eye color. And what if it is actual treatment, but the resulting treatment is actually going to enhance you above what would normally be the case, which sometimes happens?
Jay wants a chance to defend himself.
All right.
You know, with the balding, though, so then we determine who gets it. Because does someone in their 80s get it? Or we know a little girl who has alopecia, and she just took some treatments and now has a full head of hair. Does she get it? She's 4.
This line between repair and enhancement is not as easy as we sometimes think. Because the typical way Christians respond to this is to say, well, if it's repair, it's okay. If it's enhancement, it's not. But that gets a little fuzzy. And I'm wondering if there aren't some other biblical principles we ought to look at when we look at this. I am of the view, and I believe it's biblically supported, that you should not take that therapy that the doctor had asked of you. And that the reason we don't take it really comes down to two questions we need to ask. And if we have clarity on these two questions, I think we can think biblically through enhancements. Now, let me define again what we mean by enhancements. We're talking here about a transhumanist movement that wants to take human evolution and seize it by the horns and make it work faster. That's what transhumanists want to do. They don't want to wait around for slow change over time, over billions of years. They want it now. And they believe that through a combination of biochemical therapies, biotech, and merging human minds with computers, we can help the race leap forward in its evolutionary development, and we won't have to wait around for a couple of more billion years to get what we're after. All right? That's the thinking behind it. It's called the transhumanist movement. The transhumanist movement is led by guys like Gregory Stock, for example, at UCLA. And these are guys who are very interested in bettering the race. In fact, it's not even bettering the race, it's transforming the race possibly into a whole new creature. That's it. No limits. The new dignity applied to biotech is invent yourself any way you can, use whatever mechanical or chemical means you need to do it, all's fair game. Now, as a Christian, here are the two questions I think we need to begin to look at before we just run into this. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I said this last night, but it's really interesting. Even at Christian worldview forums, this is the topic I get the most pushback on from the students. They do not get why we wouldn't enhance ourselves. Why not? Summit, I mean, every time I talk about bioethics at Summit and talk about enhancements, it's like stirring up a hornet's nest. The Q&A, my open forums, the porch is packed. And it's all with students wanting to know, hey, how do we, why is this wrong? Why, I don't get it, what is it? So this is a big deal and our students need to know about it. So, first question I would ask is, what does it mean to be human? Now notice something that's going on in the culture. We're told by guys like Steven Pinker, we don't even need to ask the question, what does it mean to be human? We're told that metaphysics, meaning questions about ultimate reality, should be kept out of this debate completely. All we need is consent and autonomy. They want to enhance humans without ever asking the question, what does it mean to be humans? Do you see a potential problem with this? In other words, how can you tell me what the good is we're aiming at when you don't even know what that is according to my nature as a human being? Do human beings have natures we ought to fulfill, or do we just make it up? You gotta answer that anthropology question before you answer the enhancement question. And Christian worldview says we do have natures we ought to fulfill. We are not ghosts in a machine. We are not bodies that happen to have the real you in the mind, and therefore you can do whatever you want with your body. It's just matter in motion. That's not the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview is that you as a human being, an image bearer, are a dynamic union of body and soul. Your body matters. By the way, a lot of Christians have become Gnostic in their view of the body. They think, oh, all that matters is the spiritual side of me. No, the Bible says your body matters. It matters. And Christianity has taught this from the beginning. So part of fulfilling our nature as human beings is to respect the body and the limitations and the parameters God has given it. We aren't free just to go ahead and reinvent it and re-engineer it any way we want because our bodies have intrinsic purposes. And boy, the secular culture today does not like hearing that. I can use my body for anything I want. How dare you tell me that my body is designed in such a way to be with a woman or a man and produce children? How dare you tell me that? But the Christian worldview says your body does have intrinsic purposes. So before we answer the enhancement question, we need to answer the anthropology question, what does it mean to be human? And nobody wants to answer that question. In fact, they say we can't answer it. And that's a huge, huge problem. Second question, what are biblical concerns? What are biblical concerns with this therapy that this guy is offering? Here's my first one. It relates to the Imago Dei. Why do we want to enhance ourselves? Why? We're broken, yes, but remember, we're not talking here about repair. We're talking about going way beyond. Why in the culture do people want to do this? What is it that's driving that? Yes, but there's something even sadder. It's not just the survival of humanity, but you're getting warm. What else?
They want something they can't have. They covet.
Getting really close, really close. Not, okay, yeah, you're all there. I'm going to give it to you. You got it. All right. Think about this. The Christian worldview says we have a dire need, right? We're broken. We're sinners. We need Jesus to save us. The secular world recognizes that same problem. They see things wrong with the world, themselves. You know why they want enhancements? To fix themselves so they can be accepted. The Imago Dei says this, everybody in this room right now, regardless of what you did last night, your looks, your body style, your intellectual ability, your emotional state, your relationship status, the biblical worldview says everybody in this room has intrinsic dignity that is absolutely equal. There's no variance between us. Because what grounds our dignity is we bear the image of God. The culture, though, confuses intrinsic dignity with attributed dignity. Here's the difference. Intrinsic dignity is yours because you're a human being who bears the image of God. Attributed dignity is what you get through achievement or maturity. For example, the beach bum and the university professor have equal intrinsic dignity. They do not have equal attributed dignity. In other words, the university professor has applied his life in a way that fulfills his nature and allows him to flourish. The beach bum has not. Although there are days that beach bum sounds really good to me. Maybe he is smarter than the rest of us. I don't know. What the culture has done, though, when it looks at enhancements, is say what matters is attributed dignity. My accomplishments are what give me my value and purpose. And they throw out the intrinsic dignity side. If you're a Christian, you know you're not fulfilled through marriage. You're not fulfilled by having children. You're not fulfilled because you're smarter than everybody else in the room. You have ultimate fulfillment because you belong to Christ. If you believe that you are valuable as an image bearer, you're not going to be driven to go find fulfillment and meaning by becoming better than everybody else around you so you can distinguish yourself. In other words, the Christian worldview right away says everybody, no matter what, intrinsic dignity, and it's equal. And therefore, if we are pursuing enhancements to make ourselves feel ultimately meaningful, our motivation's wrong. We're absolutely not following the biblical view on that one. A second biblical principle will be a distinction between species. Here's what's happening. In some biotech, there's an attempt to merge animal and human DNA. They're flirting with this now. In hopes of making some kind of hybrid creature, maybe. Now, look, we can all say this will never happen. Maybe it won't, maybe it will. But the Bible is very clear that God created living things according to their kinds, and it was good. Human beings are biological creatures, but we are not like everybody else that's out there. In other words, I think we all recognize that there is a difference between a hit and run with a squirrel and a hit and run with a human being, even one that's mentally disabled. Or as Christopher Kaiser likes to point out, there's a world of difference between eating a hamburger and eating a Harold burger. We know that difference instinctively. What we need to be careful of as Christians is signing on to a project that involves merging of species, because it is only human beings that are exceptional in the biblical worldview. Only us. Animals have souls, but they don't have souls that bear the image of God the way that you do. There is a difference. We're not to merge those. There's a third concern biblically, and this is one that I think we can all relate to. What kind of culture are we going to get when we start using enhancement therapies? Are we going to get a culture that is egalitarian in terms of medicine, or are we going to potentially create a have and have nots culture? So imagine this. You're a parent, you're trying to sign your kids up for school. And of course, as you know now, you have to go through all these vaccinations and all kinds of things just to get your kid into school, right? Now imagine what happens when enhancement therapies come on the scene. And you are told, records don't show that your kid has had this, all of a sudden your medical insurance is triple that of your neighbor. You can't get into the best schools. You can't sign up for the best medical treatment because you have not had the enhancement therapies. There is that risk of that coming. And especially in a culture that has not decided what the ultimate good should look like, you could be looking at that. Here's the big one for me, though. Number 4 and number 5, two biggies. What about future generations? Let's say you go to Stanford, you take that therapy from the mentor, you enhance your cognitive abilities, and it's a germline therapy. That means it impacts everybody that follows you in the descendant line. It's not a somatic cell treatment, it's germline, meaning everybody that follows you. Have those future generations consented to that? One of you said it, and you were right. You enhance one area, it's a trade-off. It could mean a limitation in another. And that leads to the fifth thing, and this is, to me, the biggie. Who gets to decide what ultimately ought to be enhanced? And why that narrow thing and not something else? You are going to have people making decisions about what enhancement looks like and what we should be aiming for who have worldviews completely opposite of your own. And it's going to be a small cadre of experts known as bioethicists that will be making these decisions. And people are going to lose freedom. This is Lewis's point in the abolition of man. Abolition of man, Lewis argues that as man pursues technology, he actually becomes a slave to it. Because the technology he goes after to get better freedom and better enhancement actually ends up enslaving him and taking away his freedom. And you're going to have a small group of experts making decisions about what counts as enhancement, what we all ought to be aiming toward, and it won't be democratic. They will be the ones calling the shot. They get to decide that. A sixth problem, children as commodities. We go back to what we talked about last night, creating children with traits that are designed to fulfill parents and their desires, not welcome the children as gifts. And that is a devastating blow to the idea of children as a blessing from God. And then finally, and then I'll take your questions. Did you have a question, Dick? You're just stretching? Okay. What about this? What kind of worldview is assumed in Dr. Stanford's appeal to you as a graduate student? What kind of worldview is he bringing that request to you from? Naturalism. Who said it? Yes, you're right, Pastor. It's a mechanistic, naturalistic worldview. And it basically says the ultimate good for humans is to process information efficiently. Why is that the most important thing we should be aiming for? How many of you know Down syndrome children? What's true of all of them? The sweetest, most loving people you will ever meet in your life. You're having a bad day, you walk into church, and there comes little Christy, and she is going to make a beeline for you, and you are not going to avoid that hug. It's happening. And it don't matter what you've just been through, right? She doesn't care if you have bad breath. She doesn't care if your clothes don't match. She doesn't care what you look like that day, if you just yelled at your kids or kissed your wife. You're getting that hug. Why isn't that the thing we enhance instead of cognitive processing? How many of you like baseball? Do you realize we could make baseball perfect by replacing players with machines? Think about it. Thank you. Exactly. Who is going to watch? I'll tell you who would watch. It would be fascinating for a few people for about 5 minutes just to see. And then you'd be like, big deal. Could we create a machine that can hit more home runs than Mark McGwire on steroids? Yes, absolutely we can. We can make pitching machines that throw a ball 200 miles an hour. You're not hitting it. We could have no hitters every game. Or we could change the machine so we have a home run derby that game, right? We could get perfect baseball and nobody would want to watch. If cognitive processing of things and information or physical ability is what we've chosen to be the thing we aim at, what does that do to our humanity in this world? How many of you saw the movie Wonder Woman? Not the old TV series, the newer movie that came out a couple of years ago. Did any of you see it?
Not Linda Carter. I'm not watching
it. Not Linda Carter. I'm watching it. There's one in every group. I had forgot that's who played that. Yeah, that was an 80s flashback. The newest Wonder Woman, there is a scene at the end of the movie. As you know, she's a superhero. She goes into the battlefield of World War I in the trenches. She's got her shield, and I mean, the bullets don't touch her. She does all this stuff. At the end of the movie, there was a scene that almost made me tear up. I don't know if anybody else caught this. She's walking through Trafalgar Square in London. The war has ended. People are gathered there looking for notices from their loved ones who had served, looking at pictures, trying to figure out where their loved ones might be. Some of them are learning that they're coming home. Others are uncertain. It's a mixed thing. But she's walking through Trafalgar Square right there in central London. And she is completely lost. You can see it on her face. She's walking among the crowd just looking like, I don't fit here. And that's exactly right. She was enhanced, but she no longer fit the world she lived in. What are we giving up when we go down this path? And I would say the natural fit God has ordained for us in this world. And that's a loss, because there's more to life than just processing information quickly. A lot more to life. How about love? How about compassion? How about enhancing patience? I try to remember that when I deal with Georgia drivers who won't creep out into the intersection to make their left turns. Yeah. You know? How about enhancing our appreciation for people like that Down syndrome girl, like Katie in my church, who I will see next Sunday when I'm at church. And she's coming at me. Maybe she has something, maybe Down syndrome is something that has enhanced her in a way that we'd all be better if we had a little more of that. Instead, what this whole biotech revolution is doing, men and women, it's putting decisions about what counts as most being valuable in the hands of a few experts who have a worldview completely antithetical to us. And that's why I don't want to go there. That's why I don't want to go there. Okay. I'm going to take questions for the few minutes I got left on any topic.
I was going to make a comment first.
Yes.
You know, as one that has to get up in the middle of the night two or three times, I had you on a pedestal. I thought you were enhanced. And then you had to...
Okay, well, you still got a problem that I visited the loo.
What do you think of this guy? This is hardcore worldview. Next time we're going to talk about hardcore pornography. You want to be here and bring your friends. We're going to take your questions. I'm going to try and get a mic to you so we're recording this for a reason. So.
Yep.
Press on questions.
I don't know this. I don't absolutely know this for a fact, but I heard this, read this. Somewhere, but Iceland has created no Down syndrome births
right.
in their population.
Right.
And I don't know. I would assume that's from sonograms and then abortion.
Exactly.
But it's kind of like your pill in reverse to me. Because it's determining, you know, the value in this case of not an enhanced, maybe, or maybe an enhanced person, like you were saying. But that's kind of scary because all this stuff you're talking about here, bam, there it is.
It's back to the same thing. We're making a value decision that some lives are not worth living. And that's what's driving everything we've talked about really this weekend, that value decision. By the way, in addition to the books that you need to buy, keep your salvation before you leave today. That was a joke. It really didn't work at all. I need an enhancement. That did not do well. Again, if you want to get my two books and a debate DVD with me debating the president of, or former president of the ACLU on abortion, $25, you get all three of those. That's great for your teenage kids, great for your church youth groups, by the way. Also, you may want to pick up Gilbert Belander's book, Bioethics, and two books I didn't mention, but they relate to today's topics. Biotechnology and the Human Good by my colleague and friend Ben Mitchell and his team, outstanding from a biblical worldview, how to think about this. And then a real quick read, Jonathan Van Meeren, a Canadian guy, pro-life guy I've mentored and worked with, phenomenal thinker, has written A Guide to Discussing Assisted Suicide. This book is a gold mine on that topic. Do not let the fact that the guy is 27 fool you. He has got an enhanced intellect, all right? I don't know what he's drinking in the morning, but I want him. He is smart. And this book is just an outstanding guide for understanding it. Again, it's called, and it's in your notes. In your notes, I give you the names of these books, so they're there. Okay, next question. Dick, if you want, I can repeat the questions, and if that helps, save time.
Sometimes it works.
You talked about with the enhancements only being mental. In my management class at the university, we talk a lot about genetic enhancements and replacing different parts of the DNA, so you have this better immune systems and our acute diseases and other things. Where would you say the line is? Because you were talking about more mental capabilities, but there's way more than that.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And I stuck with cognitive ability, and fair point, by the way. I stuck with cognitive ability because that's where the whole transhumanist thing is going. They're not dealing with the genetic stuff. One could look at that as repair, saying, look, we've got these issues going on genetically. Let's try to fix them so we don't have to deal with them. So things like sickle cell anemia and other things are being put on the practice, and I think they might be in clinical runs right now. You may know better than me. But that's where it gets fuzzy for me. At what point do we say, should we be altering the genetic structure of an embryo to do this? Because one of the things they're doing is creating embryos in vitro and doing that gene editing. They're doing it in the UK right now, doing it in the test tube right there. Of course, the number of embryos destroyed from this is just astronomical. So that raises a moral red flag. The process itself is problematic, but that doesn't mean it's intrinsically wrong itself. So I'm going to tell you I have to do more thinking on this, on that topic. And rather than give an answer that isn't well thought out, I'm going to tell you on certain diseases like that, this is where I think we as Christians need to start thinking very hard about what this means and where we're going with it, because we haven't thought about them, and I need to think more about it on that particular fine point. Fair question.
More of a comment, but I feel that the American church needs to teach more on the theology of suffering, because that's the basis for, I feel, for a true understanding for the layman of how to make these decisions, because without suffering, we have no need of God. And part of suffering, yes, it came with the fall, but how are we to say that was not part of God's perfect plan? Obviously it was. So in the grand scheme of things, we need to ultimately bow to God and trust him, because that's what our main purpose and point of this life is to worship him. And that might be coming through suffering. You know, my daughter and I just watched Corrie Ten Boom other day, and in this documentary, it said how she was heartbroken. This guy that she had fallen in love with ended up not marrying her because his mother disapproved of her societal the fact that, okay, then I'm just not going to be married. And she just kind of washed her hands of that and didn't pursue that part of her life anymore, and just dedicated her singleness to the Lord. But look at how she's now a part of history because of that.
Would you agree that Christians should always, let me rephrase this. Should Christians accept legitimate suffering? But there could be suffering we can alleviate. And we should, if our attempt to alleviate that suffering is tethered to moral truth, meaning we're not doing wrong and cheating to avoid. For example, if some stranger in the middle of the night dumps a truckload of garbage on my front lawn, I can't avoid suffering for that by scooping it onto your lawn. I should suffer evil in that situation rather than inflict it. So a Christian will never avoid legitimate suffering. But there will be suffering that it is part of the creation mandate for us to work to alleviate it through God's common grace he's given us, knowledge to reverse the impact of the fall, so to speak. So you're making a good point that the Christian has to walk that fine line. And this is why we have to have morals that are objective so we can make decisions that are based on truth, not just feeling, not just on what I want. So fair point. We do need to make sure our suffering, when we approach suffering, we do it with a biblical view. You.
This is a great discussion. I hate to return to something somewhere else, but I did want to ask for a minute, Scott, back on the advanced directives and
enhancing
death versus extending life and so forth. And it deals with personal experience. My mom had Alzheimer's, and over a period of 5-6 years, of course, her health declined, and she ultimately died from it. I would hear words like, well, she's actively dying. That was a term that her doctor used a lot. And we need to allow her to actively die. And toward the end, they said, you know, hydrating her and food would only make her more uncomfortable and so forth. It's hard to know when to believe a doctor and when it's, you know, their exercising philosophy. But what about resuscitation? One of the things that was in, you know, her, I guess, advanced directive was not resuscitate at some point because
right.
It might break her ribs and this and that. Well, what are your thoughts on resuscitation?
I don't have any problem with DNRs in that situation. And the reason is, you're exactly right. And this was true of my sister. She's 88 pounds. You're going to go in and literally break every bone in her upper torso doing a resuscitation attempt. There wasn't a point to it. So that is very different than intentionally killing someone. What's killing the patient at that point is their underlying pathology, not you taking action on them. So as Christians, we are not obligated to always interfere with natural death. We are obligated to never intentionally harm. And there could be good medical reasons for not putting a patient through that. You're not making a value judgment on their intrinsic value at that point. You're not saying, oh, their thought life is gone. They're, you know, the real them is no longer there. You know, you hear people say this about people with illness. Oh, they're not there anymore. Yes, they are. They are a living body. They are there. And I will not accept that language. But there could be medical judgments we make, not value judgments, where we say this isn't good for the patient to have to go through this. So I don't think that a DNR in this case is anywhere near assisted suicide or whatever. By the way, on my sister, just to finish that story, it's funny how God gives you opportunities toward the end of someone's life to perhaps be part of a turnaround. What people need who are dying is not assisted suicide. They need pastoral care. They need to hear, I love you. I forgive you. Will you forgive me? I mean, meaningful things like that. One of the things I was able to do the last year of my sister's life, I knew she was fading. I helped get her reconciled to her kids. And they came out and visited, spent a week with her. I was able to share gospel. Now, do I know for sure that she put her faith in Christ? No. Here's what I do know. On Good Friday, I went to see her. She was not very present, very loopy, and her not mentally present anyway. And she didn't seem to be responding to me talking to her, so I stayed about 20 minutes, and I said, as I often did when I left, hey, let me pray with you. I prayed. She sat up in bed and said, now I'm going to pray. Whoa. Dear God, thank you for my brother who comes to visit me. Thank you for being with me in this hospital and forgiving my sins. Amen. That was the last cogent thing I heard from her.
Wow.
Now, some might say, well, we don't know a lot from that. You're right. I don't have a way to prove. That's a lot more than the thief on the cross got out.
Yeah.
You know, so don't, when you're dealing with dying people, treat it as an opportunity. They don't need to be killed. They need to be engaged pastorally. That's what they need. It's not easy. It's tough to be around people who are dying. It's not easy. I don't like it. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't like it. Some people are built for that. I'm not. I did the best I could, is what it boiled down to. And I'm looking back going, oh, I blew that. I could have done this better. I mean, that happens to all of us. But at least there's that sense that maybe God did something redemptive there toward the end. So.
Really enjoyed your comments.
Thank you.
I was reading Isaiah 46:10. He said, declaring the end from the beginning. And in the beginning, we find this temptation for enhanced knowledge.
Yeah.
Offered by Satan to Adam and Eve, who was in a perfect environment, had everything.
It's an old temptation, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's an old temptation that we need to realize it's we're there like never before. Because I think as a society, we have, without God's permission, moved into the tree of knowledge of good and evil and turned it more to evil than good. And death is a result of it. We're seeing it all around us in every kind of a way. So when you take something that God might intend for you to have after you have grown to the point of being able to handle it, he permits it. But if you gather more than you need before you have permission, the Bible says it'll stink.
In Genesis, God flooded out the world, and some of the people are wondering why. Here's a possible answer. Sons of God marrying daughters of men, maybe polluting the human race gene pool, which is what we're talking about. And he flooded out the world, I think, for that reason. And it seems to me, and I would like you to maybe comment on this, that we're going back there again, trying to do the same thing that happened in Genesis, of trying to pollute the gene pool.
I honestly have no idea why God flooded the earth beyond what the text says, and the only thing I can point to is man was exceedingly sinful and his wickedness was so bad that God could tolerate it no more. That's all I got to go on. I can't. Everything else would be guess on my part on that.
The sons of God, the demons, right. Probably.
It's a weird passage, and there's a lot of weird passages in the Bible, and that's one of them. And I honestly have no idea what that's talking about. It could be that. It could be, who knows. But your larger point to messing with the species, so to speak, I think the Bible is clear that we are to respect species boundaries. Absolutely. But, again, where it gets fuzzy, and it gets to your question that you raised, about what about when we're trying to repair gene structures that do start messing with the biological structure of human beings, what are those concerns we need to be aware of? I don't think that's necessarily wicked to do that. I do think we need to think carefully about it as Christians. I don't know, I can't do any more on Genesis than that. But I do think your point is well taken. Whatever they were doing, it was really bad, and God was not going to take any more of it. Therefore, we got a flood.
Yesterday and today, you mentioned the downside of the body-self dualism.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you could distinguish between that and body-soul dualism.
Yeah.
Just to clarify in our minds that one's not
right.
Good, one is biblical.
Right.
And then my second question is, I've appreciated your philosophical thinking today. Why is it important for people in the church to engage in good philosophy and not shy away from philosophy like it's a bad thing.
I like your second question more, so I'm going to take it first, and then I'll do the second one. So, or the first one. I think that as Christians, our model, at least for me, has been Daniel and his three friends when they were taken captive to Babylon. They go to Babylon as captives. They master Babylonian thought, mathematics, and philosophy, and knew it better than the people holding them captive. And when there came a time to show it, how do I put this? They intellectually kicked butt, right? So much so Nebuchadnezzar is blown away, right? There is nothing in the Bible that teaches anti-intellectualism. It's not there. That is something new that has crept into the church. Jonathan Edwards was a world-class philosopher in his own right. Okay? The major thinkers in the Christian tradition. The idea that we are somehow more virtuous if we don't think deeply and clearly, and that somehow we ought to be anti-intellectual if we're really going to be faith people, is an absurd idea, and I can prove it real quick. If being intellectual is bad and we should all have blind faith, we need to pray for God to send atheists to destroy all the arguments for Christianity so no one has any basis for believing them. And we can just have faith. Nobody wants to go there, nor should we. I think one of the reasons why we have not been intellectual in the last 20 years, I'll just throw this out here. I think, I will now go back to speech therapy like last night. I think the seeker-friendly church growth movement has been a disaster for us. And we have been afraid to touch topics that would engage the mind, and it's had the opposite effect than we intended. You know what happens when non-Christians hear Christians talk intelligently, even if they don't agree with everything that's being said? They go, well, wait a minute. They have something intelligent to say on that topic. Maybe, just maybe, there's something to the other things they believe. I've done pro-life presentations on college campuses where the Christian fellowship groups let me in, which is rare. Most of the time they won't touch abortion. But when I do, here's what's interesting. I don't give altar calls at the end of the talk. But I do say this. If you are convinced on the basis of today's talk that Christianity can speak intelligently to the pro-life issue, can I invite you to open your mind to think that maybe, just maybe, Christians have something important to say on the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ, him being the only way to salvation, and him being God incarnate? And I just let it hang there. Students come up and we're talking eternal matters right then and there. Why? Because those topics drew them. It didn't repel them. It drew them. And what's the big thing we hear about religion in the media today? Oh, it doesn't count as real knowledge. Well, we've helped feed that myth, thankfully, to their side. So anyway, that's the first part. Body-soul dualism versus body-self dualism. Thank you for bringing this up. Body-self dualism says the real you is all your mind and spirit. It's your intellectual side, your cognitive abilities. Your body doesn't matter. Body-soul dualism says both matter. There's a dynamic union of body and soul. Body and soul, your soul does not fill your body the way that water fills this glass right now. That's not the Christian understanding of it. Rather, the soul infuses the body. You are embodied creatures. In other words, we're a dynamic union of body and soul. And that's different from saying that you are only your cognitive ability and your body doesn't matter. Does everybody see that distinction being different? That's the difference between the two. Does that answer the...
Yeah, thank you.
You know what?
We got a press conference here where people are fighting over the mic. Does that sound familiar? Last week? You're a terrible human being. A beautiful Ted over here. Anyway, go ahead.
Can you comment on any examples of right of conscience issues that are happening in the United States now with physicians or pharmacists?
Yes.
And what we should look for?
Yeah. Under the Obama administration, doctors were intentionally targeted with their rights being overridden. The Bush administration before then had put in place conscious clause legislation or directives that allowed doctors to opt out of things they found morally objectionable. The Obama administration stripped those away. And the Trump administration has begun fixing some of that. I don't know the extent of it, but there is some of that that's been fixed. But the problem is, even in the state of California, you had pregnancy centers that do medical work for clients, and if they did not refer for abortion, the state would put them out of business. Now, that got knocked down at the Supreme Court this last summer. By the way, elections matter. So anybody who thinks they don't, I just need to tell you they do. And why do you think you're seeing what's going on now, the attempt to reverse things in Florida? That's all about the Senate. That's all about abortion and things like this. Depends on local laws, depends on the current political environment, whether you as a medical practitioner will have protections respecting your morals or not. I wish we could see something put in law federally that had teeth in it that would just lock that up for good, but I'm unaware of that at the moment.
So the whole enhancement issue also, that we're putting ourselves in the place of God, and that same issue was what drove Hitler to be who he was. And when you look at Hitler and when you look at Mengele, it's the same situation that happened then that's happening now. It's the same thing. Another thing is years ago, I got a book that is a Native American beading, and in their beading, they have one bead that is not precise with the rest of them, and it's called the spirit bead. And the reason they do that is because it shows that they are not, that they're human and they're not God.
Mm-hmm. By the way, before I forget, thank you. You all got sled cards. You're probably wondering, what are those sled cards? It's a one-minute defense of the pro-life view. Your Aunt Betty comes to visit you at Christmas, wants to know why you're pro-life. Front and back side of this, you're welcome to take one home. All you need to do is tear off this part. I need you to fill it out so we can mail you our five-minute pro-lifer, which we mail out about 3-4 times a year, which is a training piece, front and back page. You can read it in 5 minutes, and it equips you to speak more intelligently on the pro-life issue. Fill that out, leave it on your chair, or drop it at the back table. Drop back table probably better, and you can take this sled card home with you. But if you don't fill it out and you take the sled card home with you, you too will lose your salvation. So you never heard Ellen.
Final quick question.
It's just a simple question. I wanted to know what your feeling is about right now, big issues in Montana about using marijuana as a means to ease pain for some people. And of course, a lot of people are against marijuana usage because it leads to other things. But what's your thought on that? I mean, as a Christian, you try to say, yeah, let's do what's right.
I am not
a lot of people that
right.
They could benefit.
I am not qualified to speak on the medical question. Does medical marijuana treat pain? I'm not qualified, so I'm going to just say that up front. I don't know. Here's what bothers me about it. It has clearly been used as a wedge to get way more than that, to move toward recreational use. That has been true in Colorado, that has been true in California, that is true in Washington, and other states that have moved that way. Are there other alternatives to treating pain other than medicalized marijuana? I don't know, so I'll just pause on that. What gives me the concern is how it's being used. Everybody and their brother knows it's politically motivated. Now, that doesn't mean that there could be no case where it would help. That's the part I don't know. I'm concerned about the political wedge that it has become.
I will say this. you should have a conversation with my friend, Dr. Chris French from St. Mee's, who's a neurologist, about the issues with that in the human brain. Thank you for coming this morning. We really appreciate you being here. We could go on and on for a couple more hours, but...
Enhanced Q&A.
By the way, buy a book. If you can make a donation, help us pay for this. We really appreciate it. Come back in February 8th and 9th. We'll be right here. Blessings.